What's up, everybody? We're here from Mudball Monday.
The golf this week from Rory was
third leg. If you make the top player on another team cry because he was beaten so badly, it's a tough scene. I mean, there's no other way to put it. It's a really tough scene.
I love his energy. I love his golf swing. I love the way that he plots around the golf course. He's a total, you know, culture ad. Like, I'd love getting a beer with Homa.
What I really wanted was, like, every guy walk up to the tee, hat on, and then throw that shit down, or, like, throw it to the crowd and be like, we're going no hat, you know?
Good morning. I hope you're joining us with a nice warm cup of Good Walk coffee in hand. It is Monday morning. My name is Walker Simas. I am joined today by Henry Shimp. We are here today to break down the Ryder Cup and talk about the happenings of this week. We are recording here on Sunday, late afternoon, early evening. Henry, how's your brain? Where's your mentals at post Ryder Cup?
Yeah, it was a great week. I mean, you know, novelty is everything when it comes to sports and anything else. And the fact that we only get Ryder Cup week once every 2 years is what makes it so fun. And, you know, it went how it went. We'll get to the takes. I'm not going to drop any of them right here, but I think my takes are going to center much more around, like, where are we at on the Ryder Cup overall? Not US. Again, I'm going to holster anything further, but just where are we at? So, happy to be here. Mudball Monday. Let's lead it off with the dirt. I'll toss it to you first to tell me what you have been drinking, eating, reading, and thinking this week before we get to the episode.
Well, before we even get to drinking, I'm repping my Good Walk merch here. So I'll start with my beans. Been crushing the Columbia medium roast recently. Full calf. It is what it is. Looking forward to getting back to half calf, but have really been enjoying that lately. Cinnamon's been kind of the main through line this week. I've just been hard on the cinnamon. And just like eggs and other things, I kind of tend to go in phases. Maybe we'll get off, but right now, really enjoying things. A little bit of, a little tab of butter, a little maple syrup. That's kind of been my weekend gamer. During the weeks, it's just black coffee. And I say just black coffee, like it's some bad thing. It's absolutely not. So that's what I've been drinking, at least on the caffeinated front. A lot of water. Things are kind of cooling down here. We've had some mornings that are even into the 60s, which feels super unusual. Haven't felt that all year. So lately, just been falling in love with the mornings, like just soaking up as much as we can. Henry and I were on the phone a lot this week. And for whatever reason, I think both of us have just had like a lot of time in the mornings, like waking up pretty early. And I've had quite a few mornings where I get to just properly sit down and drink a coffee and kind of have like an hour before I really have to get moving. And that, those mornings, they just don't come around a lot right now. So have been really enjoying that. Smoothies, kind of keeping it basic on the drinking front. No alcohols this week.
Which, you know, we'll visit this many times over the years, but it's just a fucking tragedy that a smoothie is in your drinking, not your eating. But, you know, again, I don't think we're ever going to agree on that one. So tell me what you're eating, even though that should be what you're leading off the eating.
I like that we're different on that. Smoothies can be great either way, but, you know, I've been eating a lot of yogurt too. I'll just transfer this right over to yogurt, but dude, yogurt and big fan of big blueberry, little maple syrup, little cinnamon again. Even the raspberries have kind of made their way into the yogurt thing. And it's been more of a dessert, I would say. Just like little dollops. I like to keep everything separated. We've discussed Chipotle, which is on both of our shit lists right now. So we're not going to go
it's
there.
Not on my shit list. Chipotle's not. It's not on any list. It doesn't exist.
It's really a shame what's happening, and it's sadly it just started with Chipotle, and it's kind of running rampant through quite a few different operations. But the key theme here is separation. Like, can't just be mixing all this shit together.
You want every bite to kind of be a little bit different. So that's been my quasi dessert. I have a bit of a sweet tooth, and it's just been curbing that lately, which is such a great way to curb that. I have to say the other thing that I've kind of been getting into recently is just like a bag of like dark chocolate, like semi-sweet like chocolate chips basically. And just whenever you're craving a little sweetness, you just handful of chocolate chips and you're on your way. So that's kind of been a thing recently.
Or you're not, or you're just there for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, like maybe it is a little bit different than chocolate chip cookies, where it's like, fuck, man, if I'm baking a sheet, I'm eating the whole thing. But chocolate on its own can be pretty dense. Like if you're eating an entire bag of chocolate chips, I don't know. That's kind of a recipe for self-hatred for an afternoon or something like that. It really weigh you down. Is getting away from like the sweet stuff. We've got some tacos coming up for you on Tuesday, and Henry, I'll let you fully flush that out with the people. But I have been, this is week two. Like I mentioned it on Lead Ball Monday last week. Just like had so many fucking tacos this week. It's incredible. So at work, there's this gas station, like, I don't know, a quarter mile down the road, and they have this incredible taco setup. You can just go and get, three or four for lunch or something, but they cater so well. Like they can just throw everything in 10 boxes basically and load you up for like a really good price. Feeds like 15 people. And we've been doing that like twice a week. And I just keep being sent home with all the leftovers. And I've got like 45 tortillas and like just cases of carne asada and chicken. And I have this box of cilantro in my fridge. It's chopped cilantro, which kind of loses the freshness after a while. Like the fresh cut cilantro is powerful, but after a couple of days it kind of dries out and gets a bit more mellow. But if I had five, six, seven tacos a day, it would take me 2 weeks to finish off the cilantro that I have left. And I probably had 15 or 20 this week. So it's just been heavy on tacos, and we will continue for week three. After week three, I'm shutting it down for a while. It's going to be on overplay watch. So that's where we are on the eating. Anything else? And I fear I'll be getting too long on the eating front. Reading, as I mentioned, I think I'm going to be boring here for a while. I'll mention two things. I've been listening to the Bible, through Exodus. The first couple books in the Bible are tough. Like it's heavy on law. And it's just like the family tree, like the original family tree. It's just like name after name after name. And I look forward to like the next 3 or 4 months of listening, but right now it's a little bit tough, but it's necessary. So, been just, I would say I've been really enjoying it, but I think I'm kind of acknowledging where I'm at and all that. And then I got sent an article from a buddy this week, and I'm not even sure if I sent it over to you, but it was a good friend of ours, good friend of the pod. And he sent me an article about Alistair Mackenzie, and basically trench warfare and like how his origins, which I've read of in other books and stuff. Alistair Mackenzie's writing is great, but just learning more about how he began like actually carving out trenches to just to fit seamlessly within the land and be kind of obscured by the land's natural features. And I really enjoyed that article. So if I haven't sent it over to you already, I'll do that, and I'll post on the story this week so you guys can take a look at it. Obviously been thinking a lot about the Ryder Cup this week. It's basically, I would say if any event this year just was kind of most captivated by this week. And I was thinking a lot about the golf course and really got proven wrong. We'll talk about this some today, but golf in Italy is surprisingly not that interesting.
and I kind of formed an early take on the golf course. I didn't think it was going to be something really special, and I just thought the way the conditions fleshed out, the way that the course was designed specifically kind of for match play, the way some of the holes were played this week, just the general atmosphere was really good. And so I enjoyed, that was like one of the big things that I was really paying attention to and got a lot from this week. So that's kind of been my thinking. Not a whole lot of personal stuff to share this week. So yeah, excited to get into your takes and just kind of shift it back and forth here. But that's my dirt. Henry Schimpf, going back to you before we get into the thick of it.
Yeah, more the same on the drinking front, especially being Ryder Cup week, waking up early, straight to the good walk, just greatness, greatness. It's where the Mudball Half Calf really comes in handy. I make like 36 ounces and just absolutely house it. And then if it hasn't been the Mudball Half Calf, I've been on the Clubhouse South American Dark Roast. I'm a dark roast guy. One of the things to me that speaks so well of good walk is that my two favorite blends, Mudball Half Calf is in its own camp. We're not talking about that. But my two other favorite blends would be the Clubhouse South American Dark Roast and the Mocha Ethiopian Light Roast. And I find with a lot of coffee roasters, to me, and this is geeky stuff for sure, but I kind of bucket them as either a light roast roaster or a dark roast roaster. I'm not giving any free ads, but I have certain coffee roasters that I only like dark or light. With Good Walk, I like them both. It just there's so much good stuff, and you can use code the tie for any of that stuff at goodwalkcoffee.com. So that's THETIE, goodwalkcoffee.com for anything that you want to get after. Rolling into my eating, two things. So you were talking earlier about bowls. It's a bowl week for me. So it's not every week. Dinner to me, like I always kind of know by Saturday, Sunday what dinner's going to look like leading into the week because I don't have enough time after work and whatever else goes on to be like making things up on the fly. So I need to kind of know what I'm getting into. And not every week is a bowl week, but this week is going to be. And I'm particularly excited for this one. We're going Nando's bowls. So I'm going brown rice, got some nice piri piri marinated chicken, got some mixed veg, got some arugula, and then got some Nando's sauce that I'm just going to hammer over the top of it. So those are going to be absolutely awesome. I know you've never had the
Shout out Barclay
pleasure of
Brown.
Nando's, but it's just magical stuff. Their sauces travel very nicely, and really looking forward to getting to that. Nando's, God, I don't know why we don't have more Nando's in the States. They actually are coming to Houston, I believe. There's Nando's in Chicago, a lot in the DMV, but other than that, it's just a tough scene. I mean, Nando's, and I already can see the heat and the DMs on this one, but it's like a big boys version of Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A, I think that the real hardcore age range for Chick-fil-A is like when you're like six, you kind of become privy to Chick-fil-A and start to be like, man, this is good shit. And then all the way through like 18 or 20, Chick-fil-A is just electric. And then you kind of get to be an adult and you're like, it's still good. Don't get me wrong, but like you're not going to Chick-fil-A like you once did. Like when you're 15 years old, you're going like four times a week. Nando's just skews that a little bit higher. I think you're probably not really getting into Nando's until you're like more close to that 14, 15 age. But then like, shit, I'm gonna be 45 and still obsessed with Nando's, So it has a longer lifespan to me. Again, I already could see the heat in the DMs, but that's my Nando's take. And then on top of that, sorry, go for it.
No, I was just going to say that the age range that you mentioned happened to be like the height of the Chick-fil-A empire in my eyes, like
Oh,
peak
it's peanut oil
quality.
Chick-fil-A.
It was peanut oil Chick-fil-A. So maybe there's like some slight bias there just because like Chick-fil-A was actually kicking it during that window. So you were in the right to love it. And as things kind of sped down as we went to canola, like you're also in the right for easing off the gas there. So maybe it's not as much of an age thing.
You could be right. Nando's wins. Other thing to add, you talked about the tacos. So this Tuesday, October the 4th, is not only Taco Tuesday, it's a particularly special Taco Tuesday. It is a 1 in 52 Taco Tuesday. It is National Taco Day. And so the Thai guys are going all in, nothing but tacos, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I'm going to eat between 10 and 15, depending on where I end up going. You know, some places tacos are significantly smaller than others and shit like that. But it's going to be a lot of tacos. And so the ground rules, and take part however you wish. This is speaking to the listeners here. The ground rules for us are going to be one meal in house. So I'm going breakfast tacos in house, and then lunch and dinner will be away. And nothing but tacos. Don't no no softening on the matters and saying like, ah, oh, you know, I've already had six tacos and it's 1:30. Like, I'm not doing dinner tacos. No, not, don't be that guy. So if you decide to join us, hit us up in the stories. We'd love to see it. Very excited for National Taco Day. So that's gonna be a good time. Reading. Finally finishing up with An Awakening at Sleepy Hollow. Have really enjoyed that book. I've been enjoying just in general. I've been talking about this recently, like doing some books at the same time and taking my time a little bit more, which is not what I typically do with books, but I've enjoyed kind of changing my pace there. But I'm moving on to The Last Days of Roger Federer. I've always been a huge Roger Federer fan, just one of my all-time favorite athletes. So excited to dive into that biography, not autobiography. I would prefer it that way, but a biography nonetheless. So that's my reading and then my thinking. You know, you were talking about how the weather is improving in Tampa. I guess you could say it's improving in Austin, and I'll go to the grave. Like, I'll take 106 degrees over 36 any day. I just don't want that cold shit. I know some people like it. It's not for me. But what I am gonna say is I am getting pretty darn tired of the heat. Being that it is October 1st, like, look, if you live in Florida or Texas and it's August the 12th, it's supposed to be about 104. You know, like, that's what you've signed up for. But like today, it's still about 99 degrees out there, and I'm kind of just like, man, like, it is October. Like, there's something deep within that I feel like we're kind of wired to be like, it's October. I'd kind of like to have, like, you know, a long sleeve tee on or something like that, or at least just have it be like extremely pleasant. And you know, 99's hitting really hard these days. So I've been thinking about the weather a lot this week, and I'm kind of ready to see that downward trend. But I don't think about Austin. You know, be careful what you wish for. Allegedly, these dry, hot summers mean cold winters, and I'm just not looking forward to that. So that's where we're at. Nothing more. That was way too long for the dirt. We're moving straight on to the Ryder Cup, and we'll kick it off with just kind of some high level takes. You know, give it to me. Reaction from the week, like, as a US guy, as a Europe guy, just what would be kind of your one liner when someone hits you in the morning of, oh, watching your Ryder Cup this weekend?
Yeah, I think the obvious place to start is kind of reflecting on what I was thinking going into the week. So my official prediction was 14-5, 13-5 US win. Expecting things to be close. I think the general takes on the front end were like, you know, looking at Team Europe, it's so easy to look at, okay, it's a young team. You know, Åberg's got some possible imposter syndrome going on. I didn't know a whole lot about, like, Nikolaj, for example. You know, McIntyre, I've gotten to see McIntyre play a little bit on the European tour, but just, like, don't know a whole lot about him. And then you look at Team USA, who is just, like, stacked. I mean, obviously stacked head to toe, incredible depth. And it's very easy to look at that Team Europe and say, you know, they're shining stars. They're very clear people who had to perform in McIlroy, Rahm, and Hovland. It was like, obviously those three have to step up, and somebody who on paper probably should lose to a top 10 player in the world on the US team also needs to step up to really make this thing interesting. And then you know, like, you Scotty, I think, is the obvious one to look at here, who just, like, had a really poor week. And I was when Scotty was in that press conference at the beginning of the week talking about how he felt like he found something with the putter, I was like, it's all over. I mean, Scotty goes out and wins every match this week. A few other people play well. I had a really good feeling about Homa, who ended up having a great week.
Home was nails.
Yeah, I mean, I just, I, I mean, if you single out, if you single out Scotty just alone, I mean, that was just a huge loss for the US team. And then from there, it just went on and on and on. Like day one, foursomes, I just felt like everything was going in for Europe. It was like they were just banging flag sticks. I was out there playing golf with some buddies on Saturday, and we were just talking about how if the US team actually played half decent, it would have been one of those days where it was like Europe just they got lucky in a way. They're like I saw three or four shots hold from off the green or hitting flag sticks or things where you're like, man, I don't really know if he deserved for that chip to go in, but it went in. Like you can't say that it didn't, but it didn't matter because like it just the US team really didn't do their job. So that was day one, and obviously we could host an entire podcast on what happened today, what happened on Sunday. So yeah, those are my general takes from the week. Obviously, just really poor stuff from the US, like things that were pretty avoidable, but also, I mean, just some nails golf from Team Europe the whole week, head to toe. You?
Yeah, well, I'll say a follow-up on Scotty. Scotty actually wasn't that bad overall. However, big however, he is our top guy, and they fucking made the guy cry. You know, like if you make the top player on another team cry because he was beaten so badly, it's tough. It's a tough scene. I mean, there's no other way to put it. It's a really tough scene. I'm gonna like flip the script here. And I've been thinking about the Ryder Cup. You know, it's been like kind of the only thing other than the weather in my dome the last few days. And so some quick numbers. I gotta throw a couple numbers in here. Like there's this narrative that, and yes, absolutely, on paper, the US team year in, year out is a better team, but it's not a massive difference, right? Like it's a difference, but we're not talking about the Walker Cup here, where it's just like, look, this team is so much better that if this thing is close, then like something has gone wrong here. But I mean, if you look at the top players from Europe, they're just as good as our top players. And then it's just kind
Easy.
of where the depth goes, right? But I mean, you've got four guys sitting each day. Let's not sit here and worry about too much the difference between the teams because there is one, but it's not that big. But what's more interesting and unfortunate to me is the fact that when you look at the last four in each hosting site, so the last four in America and the last four in Europe, when we're home, are up 20 total points in our last four of them. Europe is up in Europe 18 total points. And so the 20 total points with the US, that includes Medina. So we have a loss in there and we're still up 20 over the last four. So our average margin of victory being five. And for Europe, their average margin of victory in Europe is 4.5. So point being here, these things just like they're not close anymore. And I know this is not some like hot take here, but to me, the conversation needs to be more centered around like, all right, guys, like this is not that interesting anymore when all of a sudden by like hour two of watching this coverage, it's like, how is this thing like what needs to happen for this to be halfway interesting from a standpoint of who ends up winning? Like, I love watching it regardless, to be honest with you. If you just take each match in and of itself, it's fun to watch, you know, like even those last few matches today when it's like it's not really gonna matter. Like, it's still fun, you know. These guys care so much, the environment is great, more on that in a moment. It's still fun to watch, but to me, the biggest thing just comes down to like how do we get this thing to be a little bit closer? So here are my two things. One, I think it would be really interesting to talk about having the away team set up the golf course, obviously not select the golf course, but set it up to level things a bit. And then my biggest takeaway from this whole deal and thinking about particularly America when they're in Europe, but the same thing when Europe's in America, of like how this thing has become so lopsided is like think about football. It is, and the further you go along in the game of football or basketball, it becomes such an important part of being a great player to be able to play on the road, to be able to play against different fans. That's not a thing for golfers. Golfers don't sit around and think about, I mean, maybe Brooks and Brothers 54 do, more on that, but those guys don't sit around and think about being an opponent very often, right? Like, you're not thinking about playing against a crowd that is objectively against you and is like rooting for you to miss shots and will celebrate when you miss a putt, right? And so I think that is the biggest thing here. And there's no solve here. I'm just purely muckraking. But people, every time we play this Ryder Cup, and we're Americans, and so we're hearing the American media, and we don't get to see the other side, but it would be fascinating to go undercover, be in Europe when an American Ryder Cup is played, and they lose by 10 points and see how they're reacting. I bet it would be about the same. They'd be like, what is going on? What is wrong with us? Like, we're great in Europe, and then we go over there, and I guess they're just a way better team than us. I think it's the crowds, man. Like, we talk about the golf course, and we'll get to that here in a moment, but I know that Le Golf National was kind of a wild setup, and that really did favor them. But like, from my, what I gathered this week, like, I get the 180 to 220 thing, and that they did stack some of the yardages and things in favor of the Europeans. But I mean, I'm looking at that golf course in Rome, and that looked like pretty American style golf to me. And at the end of the day, like, better golfers play better on golf courses. I don't really care what course it is. Like, if you tell me, hey, John Rahm and fuck, I hate that I'm throwing him in there, but I'm doing it. John Rahm and Jordan Spieth are going to go play golf on these five golf courses. Who do you think is going to win on each of them? I'm going to be like, I don't care which five they are. I'm picking Rahm. He's a better golfer. And I think most people would agree with that. Better golfers are going to win the majority of the time. And I just think that we overplay the whole golf course thing. And I think we underplay the crowd stuff. You know, you hear other people talk about it in preview shows and whatnot. And people are like, oh yeah, you know, I was thinking about all this and I kind of forgot about what the crowds are like once the gun actually goes off. And, you know, it's hard. And at the end of the day, it's not just like random that somehow on earth, the away team never plays well. Right. Because that's the takeaway this week. It's like, hey, look, the US team just didn't play that well. Well, I don't think Europe left whistling straight after losing by 10 saying that they played really well. I don't think the U.S. team left the Golf National saying that they played super well. I think that it's just playing against those crowds is really, really difficult. And it seems to me to be a bit of a lost point in this whole conversation with the golf course and the task force and this, that, and the other.
I agree with you that the golf course is way too much of a point. It's very American style of golf, and if it favored one team, it was so slight, it was just insignificant. The crowds are interesting. You'd be idiotic to say that there is no effect, but we've all, hopefully everybody listening to this has played some form of match play, and if you've played some form of match play, you know what it's like to be down, especially when you know, you're kind of closing in on your final hole, and extending that out, not just from one single match, but for the event as a whole, because we're talking points here. Combining being down so handily after day one with being away, it was just, they created a much steeper mountain for them to climb in day two and day three. By Sunday morning, they had forced their hand into needing basically a perfect day. And as you know, like, you send out all your best guys to play 1v1, and the odds of everybody bringing home a point is just incredibly slim. And that's just kind of what Team USA had to do today. And listening to the press conference after the round, basically everybody acknowledged that Spieth put it better than anybody else, but there's just not a whole lot you can do. So this had a lot to do with day one, and I can just feel it. I mean, it showing up on the first tee, the first day of the Ryder Cup. I mean, those first six holes are so pivotal to the rest of those 3 days. Like Hovland making that chip from just off the green on one, like what a way to get your week started. You know, if you're Brian Harman, like, dude, I mean, that'll make your stomach drop a little bit. That'll give you butterflies in a bad way, in a bad kind of way. So, Rory, I give Rory a lot of shit, especially on Ryder Cup weeks, because he's a passionate guy. I like seeing emotional Rory. I really do. But
if we take away all that stuff and we just look at the golf this week, we could extend that out and talk about the year that he's had, but that's not why we're here today. The golf this week from Rory was
third leg.
The way that he, and I've seen this before, but I don't know that I've seen it like this. The way that he was shaping iron shots, I haven't seen from him in a very, very long time. Like 190, I think it was the 15th hole today. He was just like 190 yards up the hill. Burns had put a 4-iron from like 210 to 12 feet. Rory's aiming like 45 feet right of the flag, hitting like an unnecessarily big hook in there just so he can use that kind of false front to kill the momentum of that ball a little bit. Puts it to, you know, 8.5, 10 feet, kind of a double breaker curler down the hill, buries it. And then on 17, maybe it was 16 that they were playing. And then on 17, when all he had to do was put the ball in the middle of the green, he just flags it, just stiffs it from 200 yards. And it's like, what do you do, man? That's hats off playing.
And there was a lot of that out of, you know, the top few guys, like Rahm, Hovland was just, he was just great the whole way through. Like, to me, if this had been like stroke play, if we had decided to do a stroke play tournament this week, from what I saw, I think Hovland's the guy that would have won the
thing.
Because his standard was just higher than everybody else. I mean, the short game, it was all just fantastic stuff.
Yeah,
but Rory and Rahm, like, and I'm like not even joking with the term here. Like, they just brought the third leg out to play golf this week. Like, the two that stick out to me were yesterday. So McIlroy, and I'm blanking right now on who they were playing, but I think Spieth was in there. Stinky Spieth. We'll get there in a minute. But Spieth and probably JT against McIlroy and Fitzpatrick. I could be wrong there, but I know it was McIlroy and Fitzpatrick. And it was the 15th where, like, all of a sudden all these balls are going out of bounds. And look, I know that there's way more to it than like what meets the eye. I always am going to go to that, that if pros are consistently hitting the ball out of bounds, there's something weird going on. But whatever was going on, and balls just start going out of bounds. Fitzpatrick rifles one straight right out of bounds. And McIlroy, you know, now it's the, hey, this is an important match. And like, you're playing solo here, bud. And what does he do? 375 down the dick. Sand wedge to 9 feet and rolls it in. I mean, that like true, just get out of here, guys. Like, get out of the way. I'm better. And then Rahm, the one that sticks out to me, was, I believe it was Friday four ball. He's playing with Nikolai Høggard, who had a great week. And they're on 17. Høggard cranks one left into the Zard. And same deal. It's like, hey, this is a pivotal match. We need to play a great hole here. And you're solo. Like, he's in the hazard. This is not going to be good. And it was like the truest Rahm, like Rahm just gets that up there. And I know this didn't actually happen, but maybe it did, because this is what I'm imagining happened. Høggard like walks off the tee, tail between, is like, John, I'm sorry. Like, I screwed up there. I just needed to hit the middle of the green. And Rahm just looks at him and goes like, just watch this, and literally almost holds the thing, you know? And that's what I was so impressed with from Rory and Rahm, was not just like a super high standard of play, but, you know, with all the pressure and being the top guys, and this is why they're the top guys, but just some like some big dick golf out there. I mean, it was really fun to watch. And that's the takeaway from the week. Like, do I want the U.S. to win? Sure. But like, I just want to see great golf. I wish it was more competitive. I really do. But man, there was some really great golf this week, and those are fun players to watch. So it was seriously good stuff.
General thoughts on the golf course. What's mainly what I want to hear from you is how the conditions met the architecture, like fairly
as per usual.
You look at the golf course and it's not some artistic, it is a tournament golf course. It's not like super sexy, but it did. The utility of the golf course was fucking awesome. Like, I thought it did exactly what it needed to do. But it was green out there. You know, like, I liked how it was kind of burnt on the edges, but I mean, it was
It was pretty green.
It was Italian green. It had a little spice to it,
It
a
did
little
have a
yellow.
fair bit of a, but some nice short grass runoffs, but also some rough to hack out of. Greens had some serious room, but also some speed, but also, you could check the ball and bring it back. So thoughts on the course?
I'll tell you what, I'll go so far as to say, like architecturally speaking, there wasn't a lot that really juiced me up. But from a competitive standpoint, and like answering the question you just asked, which was a good one, I thought it was great, honestly. Like the greens had enough firmness to them. I think that was a big thing this week. Like if you think about some of the shots that were hit and there being some longer rough and the questions that are asked of the players, if those greens had been soft, it would have been like, ah, God, this is just whatever. Like, this is not that interesting because then, from wherever the guys are hitting the ball, they could have just kind of flagged it. But there was enough constitution to those greens that if guys were not hitting tee balls in the right spot, it's like from the rough, there was a clear disadvantage, right? And like, that's exactly what you want from competitive golf. You want there to be a premium placed on every part of the game, and short-sighting yourself was no good on those short par fours. Like, I thought they played great. Like
I did
16
too.
on Saturday,
16 was
four
fucking
ball.
awesome, dude.
And fuck, you got a hazard short right. So what are you gonna do? Like obviously you're just kind of saying, like, hey, I'm gonna aim 20 yards left, and if it slides, great. And if it doesn't, okay. And if you miss left, like you're short-sighted out of the rough and you're not gonna get it inside 10 feet. Like there is a clear premium on guys who hit the right shots. I think it rewarded the better golf in kind of in every way. And so again, like architecturally, I wasn't sitting there looking at the thing saying, like, get me to Marco Simone. Get me to Marco Simone, but I'll leave my clubs there and just go eat pasta. But for this thing, I mean, hats off, dare I say.
Dude, I thought the Cantlay, dude, the drama this week, fantastic for the Ryder Cup, fantastic for golf Twitter. But I don't know who spent way too much time speculating this week, and it's not my business to find out. But it just smelt like horse shit all week. I mean, I
It
don't
was in the
think it's
Italian
that.
countryside, so.
I don't think that it's that complicated. I don't think that the no hat had anything to do with cash. It seemed like that team had no issues. There was this weird kind of vibe going on at the post-round press conference with the U.S. team. It was very carefree, which I didn't really expect. Like I figured those guys would have been fairly down, and it didn't really seem that way. But the speculation, LaCava on Saturday, again, fantastic for the event, but just seemed like we being golf Twitter and the spectators of the world, were just taking it a little bit over the edge.
Yeah, I'm left by the whole thing pretty confused. Like, and this, like, speculation is the right word. We're all just fucking speculating here. Like, maybe Cantlay, the boot would fit if it was exactly what people were saying, and he was like, "Hey, I'm pissed that I'm not getting paid, so I'm protesting." Like, I don't think that's what it is personally. But again, it's 100% speculation. So please, nobody take this as like being even remotely important of an opinion. But the one thing that leaves me slightly disappointed and confused is that there was no real resolution today. Like the US team, and maybe this is guys just being who they are, but I kind of figured we were going to go out there today and everyone was going to be on one side of the fence, right? Like either it was going to be all hats on, and it's so fucking stupid. We're sitting here
Did
talking
you
about people
really?
wearing hats as like a political statement. But anyway, I thought it was going to be like, no, like Cantlay's still just like doing his thing, and no one else is like kind of coming to save him. And I think that there is an issue here. Or what I really wanted was like every guy walk up to the tee, hat on, and then throw that shit down, or like throw it to the crowd and be like, we're going no hat. Like, no, I wanted to see, because that's what Europe would do. And I don't want to get into this whole conversation of they care more than the US, because they do, and it's, they just have a better culture around it. That just is what it is. Well, we don't need to break it down in a million different ways. It's just like, look, Chipotle sucks, and then Europe is better at the Ryder Cup than America. But anyway, I wanted to see like some alignment from the US team one way or the other, either 11v1 with Pat just being out in the wilderness, or like everybody take the hat off and say, we're behind him, because at least that, like, that shows you what's going on. But we're kind of just left in this world of speculation that ultimately isn't that interesting. One thing I do want to speculate on, what I'm interested in, what text did Joe LaCava get from Mr. Clean last night? Because that to me is interesting. I mean, former caddy, you know, he's referred to Joey as being like a brother to him. But we know that Mr. Clean and Rory have a good relationship as well. So, like, what, where does Cat fall on that whole deal?
I think that Joe LaCava is like highly respected amongst everybody on tour, just like Bones is. Like, I don't think the two reputations are all that different amongst top guys or people who are kind of on the outside in on tour. However, I saw what happened, and I think Joe is in the wrong. Like, whether it was purely intentional and like bred with like some malintent, or whether he just kind of wrong place, wrong time, and loitered a little bit too long, I don't think it matters. I think he was in the wrong. I do think Rory can be an emotional little bitch sometimes. And I think it just kind of, he maybe took that moment a little bit too far. Like, yes, he did have a putt to line up to potentially get that half point, but like, he's still going to go through his routine and hit the putt with the same effort and intention that he would have otherwise, you know? I think Tiger probably loved it. That's my answer. I think Tiger probably had a good laugh and loved it. I think he loved it a lot more because he was probably in his living room and not involved in all the hassle of it. But I could be completely off. Maybe Tiger texted Joe and he was like, dude, what, like, what are we doing?
I'm really hoping you just text him like, hey, call me. It's two words, six letters. What? Call me.
We'll do a little skit here, right? So I'm Joe, you're Tiger. Ring, ring. Tiger, you texted. What's up, dude?
Joey, what the fuck?
Man, I it all just kind of happened so fast. I didn't mean it that way, Tiger. I swear. What did you see?
I don't get what the fuck you're doing. You're a bad guy.
Where are you?
Rory's
right now?
A great guy. I don't need you getting in the way. I'm on my yacht. I'm on the privacy.
I'm in the ice bath. I'm trying to get the glutes activated.
This is a disaster. I think my big thing on Rory is like he's like a guy who, you know, he drinks like once every 2 months, you know, and like, and this is an analogy to his emotions.
Rory,
like,
needs
he,
a fucking
he
vacation.
Bottles it all up, you know, like you don't get to see a lot of emotion from Rory very often on the negative side of things, or positive really. And so when it comes out, there's a lot in there, you know. It's, again, it's like, yeah, that guy that drinks once every 2 months. And then like when he's ready to have a few beverages, he's not just having like half a Coors Light, you know, it's like, it's time to get after it.
And I think they were going with Peroni's at the end, which
surely 100%. Hey, Peroni's a good beer. I respect the Peroni play, especially in Italy. It's good work.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Hey, let's wrap up here with, let's give some player, not grades or anything, but just like, give me a couple, and it doesn't have to be one from each team or anything like that, but give me like one or two surprise to the upside. And then one or two, like, yeah, that was just not that good. And I can guess where the lion's share of those will come from team wise. But what do you got?
I would say biggest surprise on the good side, Team Europe, would be McIntyre. Great week. Love watching that guy play golf. Rob, my guy Rob, lefty Rob.
I could be wrong. Did he play well?
Yeah, 4-0.
Shit. I guess I am wrong. I thought he sucked. He could, you know, and those are loaded stats from a standpoint of like, did he get carried by his partner? I apologize. I could be completely wrong, but I feel like I've been hearing people say he was kind of shitty.
Well, I mean, there's like the eye test, right? Like McIntyre doesn't
the only test,
but he doesn't pass my eye test. Like he doesn't, to me, his golf game and everything about him doesn't come off as like super sharp and clean. And like Rory passes the eye test. He just does. But
yeah, that's safe to say.
Played great. So yeah,
he was to.
Did I just totally have that wrong?
2-0-1. He won two matches and halved one of them. So
okay. Well, apologize for the bad stats there, but my answer still holds. Big fan. Kind of a letdown on the U.S. side. I mentioned Scheffler, so in the other case, I'm just going to say Ricky. He came through with he holds some good putts, but I love how stoic Ricky is throughout the entirety of the PGA Tour season, like very level headed. I'm sure he's a really nice guy, like in the locker rooms and behind the scenes. And I love how even keel he is, but from an event like this, this is kind of when I want to see the fire out of Ricky. And obviously you kind of need to play well to have some of those moments. And just, I felt like from a cultural standpoint, not knowing what happened in the team room or whatever else, I felt like Ricky didn't add a whole lot this week, where I felt like not only did he very well deserve to be on this team, but I felt like he really could have added a lot of that this week. So a little bit disappointed there.
And there was the whole, you know, Ricky apparently was sick. I'm not doubting that, that they just like made that up or something. And so that's unfortunate because it was like, it was cool. Like everything that took place for Ricky to end up being there was great. Everyone was just that sick to where it's like, hey man, like I feel like ass, like I just can't really go this week. And exactly. that sucks because Ricky could have moved the needle a little bit. You know, we might've gotten another half point or something. Only lost by 4.5 points, potentially 4 points.
I would say on the positive side, I look forward to watching Max Homa for years to come. I think mm-hmm. I love his energy. I love his golf swing. I love the way that he plots around the golf course. He's a total, you know, culture ad. Like I'd love getting a beer with Homa. I just think he's a cool guy. That's kind of my rundown. I'm curious if you have any wild takes here, because I feel something. Yeah,
maybe I'm just gonna riff here and see where my mind goes. I love the call on Homa because I didn't have a lot of positive stuff on the U.S. side.
Yeah,
you know, not to just rake him over the coals, but I just didn't. But Homa, absolutely, he was just a dude out there. Homa and Harmon, that was, you know, you made a great call early in the week of some strange pairing, right? And you were talking about Harmon and Koepka potentially.
Right.
Harmon and Homa, that was good shit. Start with, you know, the name I just mentioned. I mean, Koepka, fucking hell. Like, I like Koepka. As much as I want to hate the guy, I like Koepka. And a lot of the stuff I've talked about today of like how hard it is to go play in that environment, he should be the guy along with, like, I could see Koepka and JT
double being birds. That
kind of dynamic duo of like, JT is the total spark plug. Like, guys, I'm going to be yelling and screaming and running around like a child and everybody loves it and it's great. And then Koepka's just the, like, you know, barrel chest. Like, I'm going to be an absolute savage out here and I'm going to just go about my business quietly, but I love this environment and I'm just going to be a killer. And I got none of that out of Koepka. I mean, I got none of that. I feel like he was just doing his own thing. I can't imagine he was that great in the team room. That's all speculation. Once again, like, we don't know what the hell we're talking about, but I was pretty damn unimpressed with Koepka this week in an environment that to me gives him as good of opportunity as anybody on the U.S. team to really make a difference. So Koepka, really unfortunate there. Someone on the upside, I've kind of joked that I don't like him over time, but I've got to be honest. Like, I am and kind of always have been a Justin Rose fan, and he was a joy to watch this week. 43 years old, out there just playing good ass golf. I mean, everyone knows he stripes the ball. which he did this week, and then the putter was just nails. And I've always kind of, other than the shimmy, get that shit out of here. If when he shimmies, I want to just go yak. But some of like the points to the team and to the crowd, I mean, he was just good. And I think he's very aware, both in the moment and just collectively, of like, hey man, like, I'm 43. You got to think this is the last time he plays one, especially in Europe. I mean, at 47, that would be pretty wild if he does this again. And so I just feel like he was aware, yet focused all week on like, I know this is probably the last time. I think everyone kind of knows that. I'm going to go out here and play like a dog. And he played like a dog. So Justin Rose gave me some good energy this week. I'm just going to take, you know, kind of a slow moment here to go where my mind is now gone, which is, I mean, Jordan, it was so fucking bad. It was so bad. I mean, the results were shit. The shots were shit. The vibe was non-existent, because I do think that Spieth, like JT, honestly, like, did he kind of suck on the course? Like, yeah, he wasn't that good, but I don't think anyone necessarily expected him to go out there and like all of a sudden play amazing. It was in the solution set, but I didn't expect him to play great. But you know what? That guy, he fought hard, like, and I really respect it. And I'm not saying that Spieth didn't, but I guess the thing is that Spieth, I think, and this is just in general, not just the Ryder Cup. We're going deep here. That is true. That is very true. But he rides a little bit more off of his play. Whereas JT, like, you know, he's bringing it in the Ryder Cup, and there's some intangibles that he's bringing that don't have as much to do with his play. You know, Spieth is so in his own dome about his golf swing and the shots that he's hitting, that if he's not hitting it well, I mean, he's just going to be fucking running his mouth and doing God knows what. I mean, there was this one shot. I don't know what tee it was. It doesn't matter. None of this matters, but it had been bad, and I just wanted my guy to start playing a little better, and they showed him, and I got like a really good down-the-line look. And, I mean, he looked like a 77-year-old hunchback that was bow-legged trying to take a piss and couldn't get one out. Like, standing over his driver, it was like the most awkward-looking thing you've ever seen, and I'm just like, what are we doing? What on earth is going on here? Like, you know, Spieth is always kind of playing like band-aid golf. You know, it's like, yeah, we know that it's not good. We know that this whole machine doesn't work, but like, you know, if you put a little grease here and like add a band-aid there, a little duct tape, you know, tighten this screw, we can make this thing function. You know, we're going to get from point A to point B. But it was so bad. It was just really, really awful. And it's so bad that like, I didn't even hear people talking about him. You know, he wasn't really on the coverage all that much.
Yeah,
it was really, really tragically bad. And well, I hate that, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I know what Band-Aid golf feels like. That resonated quite deeply, honestly.
Speaking, yeah, but you don't have three majors.
That is fucking true. Unfortunately, hey, but we'll get there. We'll create one of our own. I like the call.
Can I hit one more player?
Yeah, sorry, you can hit one more player.
You continue on, but I do want to give one more thought.
Well, I love the Rosie call, and I'm curious if you have any inkling of a Masters run this year. Like, I was thinking a little Justin, yes, Rose, Åberg, yes, Neil Shipley, obviously Jordan Spieth, Kat, maybe Angel gets in the mix, Green Glove Hoffman. I mean, there are going to
Who's your four ball? You and Shipley, okay, and two other people. Not on the fucking golf course. Waffle House. We know Shipley's a Waffle House guy. Who are you going and hammering an all star with alongside Shipley?
God, that's a wonderful
team. Rose
question.
Doesn't eat waffles. He eats crumpets.
Rose doesn't even make it in my top 20. It would have to be John Daly, and
Zach Johnson.
God. No, fuck. No. God, give me somebody good. Like Ben Crane or somebody like that. Someone funny.
That's so far out of the stadium. That's a home run from the left field line directly as far as you can go. Like, that's,
you heard it here first. Neil Shipley, John Daly, and Ben Crane. In a Waffle House.
Sign this. Doing the Waffle House challenge. What a time. Okay. My final player that surprised to the maybe not surprised, but that I was just really impressed with, and I think this is a guy that kind of substantiates this whole, like, Europe's so much better than we give them credit for in a lot of ways. And I know that this is that U.S. bias, if it was over there, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, Matt Fitzpatrick, like, if you're kind of putting the bullet points together of, like, hey, who are the killers on the European side? Like, he maybe gets your fifth or sixth bullet, but he's not getting a lot of coverage. Like, this week, it's your three dogs, right? It's Rom, it's Rory, and it's Hovland. And then there's a lot going on when we're talking about Ludvig Åberg and Nikolaj Højgaard and some of these younger guys, but no one's really talking about Matt Fitzpatrick. And I mean, that guy is just absolute nails. Not only is he a much better player just overall than I think we give him credit for, he's like as European as they come in mind. You know, I think he's just like riding it when he's over there in front of the crowds. And in match play, a guy that puts the ball the way that he does, I mean, that guy's just an absolute dog. I mean, I wouldn't want, if I'm an American player, I don't care who you are, I don't want any part of him in a European Ryder Cup for quite a few years. I mean, he's only what, 29, maybe a little, he's a little older than that. But not much over 30, right around 31 or so, I would imagine. I mean, he's going to be pretty good for another few of these. And that's a tough guy in these things.
Fitzpatrick is another guy that doesn't necessarily pass the eye test either, but you're right. I mean, and I'll give you credit because you called this before the Ryder Cup, just saying that Fitzy was going to be a force to reckon with. And like, I guess he did fall off a little bit from Friday, but that's not much of an argument to make just because he was like five under through his first six holes or whatnot, virtually just shut everybody up in that first match. I forget who his partner was on Friday, but like whoever it was, they didn't really have to do anything. It might have been Rory. No, I don't think that's right. Regardless, didn't matter. He could have played it by himself and beat those other two guys. So, yeah, I mean, his record speaks for itself over the last couple of years. And let's confirm that age real quick. I'll look it up while you lead us to the end of the episode.
Yeah, my final thought of the day, and I'd be curious to hear what you think here. You know, Fitzpatrick, sorry, he won the USAM in 2013 when he was 18 years old. We're 10 years removed from that. 10 plus 18, I'm pretty decent at that one. He's 28 or 9, I think.
29.
Confirm that for me. Okay. Anyway, my final thing is just, you know, going back to kind of where I started of like, how do we make this thing closer, right? Because the whole crowds thing, that is what it is. I mean, right now, give me over under 6.5 points that the U.S. wins by in 2025 at Bethpage Black with a bunch of New Yorkers up there just ripping it. Like,
talk about over. Tough crowds.
Hammer the over, right? Like, this thing's just not going to be close. And so that to me is the whole issue here, is that we just got the absolute smoke. And I'm already saying, not that I know anything, but I don't think this is any hot take to say, like, yeah, the U.S. is going to smack Europe in 2025. And that's the whole issue, is I want this thing to be close because it's such a great event. It's really awesome. Always is better than I think it's going to be, but it's just never that close. And so my thing would be, again, the crowds, that's not a solvable issue. It's part of the deal. It's how it should be. It's how we want it to be, but it makes it really, really tough to go win on foreign soil. Let's get, you know, the minds together and talk about giving some advantages to the away team from a standpoint of like the whole thing is stacked for the home team. I guess that's how things go and how they should be. But when you get this lopsided, things such as setting up the golf course and the fact that the home side always gets to select the order in which you play four ball and foursomes. The U.S. is better at four ball. We always play four ball first. Europe's better at foursomes, obviously. They always play foursomes first. And it's because you want to get out there and run. You want to get off to a big lead, just like Europe did this week. And so, like, I think we're at this spot where you would get some agreement if you had people talking about, like, hey, this is really great. Like, how do we make this better by getting it closer? If you said things such as, like, let's see if the away team can gain some advantages that obviously you're never going to touch what it is to be the home team. But I just think it would be an interesting conversation because as great as this thing is, imagine if every year, if like the max that you're seeing the winning team get points wise is like 16 or 15 and a half, you know, if you're kind of like, man, coming into Sunday, like shit is tight. I mean, I would be, there is very little in this world that can glue me to my couch. I mean, cat at the Masters, things of that nature. I would be glued to the couch if this thing was tight coming into singles, but it's just never a thing anymore.
I've got two ideas, one for sight and the second for like maybe a little bit of policy to give the away team like a little advantage to counteract the home crowds. It would be absolutely hilarious if the away team was given one mulligan for the entire event, watching them decide when to use it. Watching Zach with his freaking earpiece, and I don't think he took his shades off all week, including at dusk, which is hilarious. But it would be so fun watching Zach and the team figure out when to use that mulligan. The second is, why don't we just find a neutral site and just do this in Saudi Arabia? Like, that's, I feel like,
I mean, that
that's
is
the easy solution.
I think you just said what is happening. I mean, it is coming without a doubt. No, Pat's going to be happy as a clam. He's going to be getting paid handsomely to do so.
We'll just host it at Emirates, and you can wear hats or not, and all the fans can commute. Whoever has more fans there has the home.
This is a long Mudball Monday, so we're going to keep going. You know, I was thinking about this, the President's Cup. Like, we lay the wood, regardless of where it is, except there's one exception to this rule. When it's at Royal Melbourne, it's tight. And I think the only reason for that, I'm being serious here, the only reason that it's tight at Royal Melbourne, it's not because the U.S. can't play that course. I mean, Mr. Clean was cleaning everybody's clock at Royal Melbourne last time, and we still barely won the thing. But to me, the big thing with Royal Melbourne is the fact that those Aussie fans are a little tough to play against. They get into it. Whereas, like, look, let's be honest about it. Like, when we go to Canada and South Korea, they're rooting just as hard for the U.S. team. Like, that's just as special to them as it is the internationals. They're not, set aside Canada, but South Koreans aren't getting behind fucking Graham DeLette and like heckling Tiger, right? Like, come on. Let's be honest about this. So I think the neutral site, that's a really interesting thought. And it's not going to happen. It's never going to happen. But, you know, that's fine. That's what we're here to talk about. Stuff that's not going to happen, but is interesting. Okay, last one. We got to get out of here, but I had to get this in. Give me your, for me, it's Tiger. It's Tiger every time. Who can make this happen potentially on the U.S. side for a international Ryder Cup, a European Ryder Cup? Who do you want to take those guys out in battle? Captain wise.
Rocco Mediate. I would love to see it. I think he would be.
Rocco,
I think he
Mediate.
Would. I seriously think Rocco would be the perfect guy. Because what did Luke Donald say at the end of this event? By the way, just classy gentleman, everything you could ever want. But he just said, "I just got out of the way. You got a bunch of players like this. You don't really need to do much other than create an environment where everybody has what they need and they can go out and play well." And Rocco would nail it. So Rocco's my guy. Who would be your guy?
Cat by a million. Cat always, cat forever. I'll die on the hill of cat. I worship at the altar of the cat.
Anybody else?
We need
cat's
a dog.
Kind of,
we
cat's
need a dog.
Kind of the obvious answer.
Okay, beyond cat, Coach Prime. I mean, Bill Belichick, Urban Meyer. I could see some Urban Meyer action in there. I mean, Dennis Rodman, he's a leader of men. I think you could say that's what we're looking for. We're looking for leaders of men.
That's right.
Probably Sleepy Joe. Let's get Sleepy Joe out there with the boys. I think that would certainly do a lot for us. So, okay. With that, we're officially done. Thank you for joining us. Mudball Monday. And we will be back next week. Cheers.
Cheers.